Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Good morning. It's Bob Steele on WTIC.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. You can listen to The Mike O'Mara Show at MikeOMaraShow.com.
Well, what have we here?
It's a podcast.
Fine.
And what excitement we have today.
It's The Mike O'Mara Show with Mike O'Mara and Rob Spiewak. Now, here's Mike.
Man, I'm looking forward to talking to our very first guest out of the chute today. We're going to talk a little baseball. Our friend, Mr. Josh Soroka, being a lifelong Orioles fan, we're going to get to that in just a second here. But first, I just want to say it is busy times in the Mike O'Mara Show world. Very, very busy times because so much going on. If you are a listener of the show, even casually, I urge you to stay tuned within the next few days. Lots of news will be coming through the pipeline. And if you're a bonus show subscriber or you haven't decided to pull the plug, this might be the bonus show that you want to check into. So
big news.
Be aware of that. Yes. That'll be happening later this week. But before we do that, before we talk about everything we have on the show today, we're going to talk a little baseball. And we're going to talk to an author. This gentleman is John W. Miller. This is the book I'm holding in my hand right now. It's called The Last Manager. There's the graphic up there. Now, Earl Weaver. I can't begin to tell you how much of a fan I am. Let's bring in John right now. A journalist, author of The Last Manager, and John has reported from over 40 countries for The Wall Street Journal and has written for Time, NPR, The Baltimore Sun, and it's time to talk about weird being a Red Sox fan and wanting this man as my manager through my formative years watching who I believe was the single greatest entertaining manager in the whole wide world. I have gone through the last two decades of occasionally revisiting some of Earl Weaver's greatest arguments, and much like the lack of personality in so much of sport now, with the I use the PGA Tour as an example, with these kind of robotic guys that don't have the sizzle they used to have. It's kind of the same thing with managers in baseball now, where you've got these well, they call them players coaches that have don't have the same kind of sizzle. Last one I can remember that was really great at it that managed probably Jim Leyland and Lou Piniella before him. But John is here, and John, this book, The Last Manager, I couldn't agree with the title more. The Last Manager, because he was the guy. Earl was just the most entertaining person in the world. This must have been a fun book to both research and to write, I would think.
It was a lot of fun. And a friend of mine, when I started it, he said, you know, who knew Earl? He said, Earl was funny, so make sure your book is funny.
Yeah.
And I think it's a funny book. I think you're absolutely right. He was one of the last great showmen in baseball. Baseball is not as entertaining as it used to be. People like that don't exist anymore within the game because it's too much money. It's too corporate. Yep. He was a free spirit and an original thinker, and also a pioneer in baseball strategy. He was the first manager to use data in the dugout in a way that's now common. He was the first manager to use a radar gun, which is a story not a lot of people know. So younger fans might see the YouTube clips of him ranting and raving. This was a serious scholar of the game, a serious person in baseball history, and arguably the greatest manager of all time. He still has the highest winning percentage of any manager.
There's the key.
with over 1,000 wins since divisional play. And he was a winner. And there's no book without the winning. He's just a clown, you know?
And I think that when you talk about Earl Weaver, everybody knows the argument. You're absolutely right about that. But one of the things that was amazing to me that I discovered in this book was that Earl Weaver was Moneyball before Moneyball.
Yeah.
And the fact of the book, I think, is that what jumped out is the fact that he used a radar gun before anybody. And it's hard to think, even of Little League. I was watching my son's Little League, and I live in Fort Myers, Florida, which is a baseball-centric place down here. And the Major League Little League kids have radar guns on them now. And to do that, and then to use the stats that he had. But he also had a great gut, great instincts. Isn't that right?
He had a yearning for an edge. I mean, he was coming from a culture that was a street culture, that was a gambling culture. He grew up in 1930s, 1940s, St. Louis. His uncle, who was kind of a father figure, was a bookie. He was somebody who was just trying to beat you at golf, at poker, at baseball, at, you know, horse racing. He owned horses after he retired. So he came out of this a more urban American culture, a more like a wise guy almost. I mean, his uncle was kind of in the mob, and Earl, he had a dark side to him. He had a kind of like hustling side. And that came from that upbringing in St. Louis in the 1930s.
I want to ask, when you say kind of in the mob, isn't that being a little bit pregnant? Isn't it sort of that? Is it all in or all out?
You're right. But I think what people forget is that there was this huge part of the informal economy that's now managed by corporations. I mean, in case of gambling, I mean, now it's FanDuel and DraftKings, but back then it was kind of the mob, and they usually didn't kill anybody. They're usually guys on the street who take your bet and pay out after the game. So it was a gentler, kinder mob. But his uncle was absolutely he was affiliated with Al Capone. I mean, this guy was no joke.
Oh.
I mean, he once got drunk and shot his wife in the hip. He was kind of a nasty character. And Earl
didn't do that.
No, Earl had a dad who was a good guy, and the uncle was not a good guy. And so Earl, he was a complicated guy. What makes such a great character is that he was kind of Shakespearean, and that he encompassed everything. He was a showman. He was an intellectual. But he was also coarse. He was also crude. He had a drinking problem. He was very funny. He could play music. He played the ukulele. He loved poodles. I mean, this is a complete man in full. He loved the garden. He had famous tomato growing contest in the 1970s with his groundskeeper Pat Sanero. And so this is like
they actually, for those of you that don't know this, in Memorial Stadium there were tomatoes growing out in was it right or left field? I forgot where they had the tomato down in left field. That one of the facts I want you to talk about here, when you talk about the fact that he was drinking, and not unlike a lot of managers of the day and the era that he grew up in, smoking was something that everybody did. But Earl, even later on, wouldn't he duck down the tunnel to grab a smoke many times during the game?
He smoked a cigarette every half inning.
Oh my God!
And it got it was so extreme that the Orioles clubhouse guy sewed a special pocket inside his uniform to keep his pack of cigarettes. And if you go to Camden Yards, and there's a statue of Earl Weaver there. He's one of the five Orioles legends, along with Jim Palmer, Cal Ripken, Eddie Murray, and Frank Robinson and Brooks Robinson. Sorry, six of them. Anyway, the statue of Earl, you can see the outline of the pocket. The sculptor put that there, the cigarette pocket.
This is coming out of
a culture of bars and honky tonks and 1930s America. I mean, this is a rough and tumble guy.
When an author says complicated, John, that usually means there are multiple layers and maybe some troubled personality traits in there. He was a complicated guy. He was he had an interesting life. He had an interesting personal life. Talk about the non-baseball part of the man, his personal world. Were there any things that jumped out at you that you found surprising when you were digging into the man as a whole?
I mean, I didn't know about the uncle and about his uncle being a bookie. So the fact that he came out of gambling culture made a lot of sense to me, because that basically is analytics. I mean, the way that bookies try to get an edge on people taking bets is how Sabermetrics analytics thinks about baseball today. So I didn't know any of that. Like a lot of baseball relationships and marriages, his first one failed miserably because he was never home.
Right.
His grandson, by the way, this is fun, is a St. Louis musician who goes by Clownvis, who has an act. He's half clown, half Elvis. And I definitely recommend YouTube.
I'm not aware of that one. That's pretty amazing.
And Clownvis was once he was once on America's Got Talent. And he was so bad, he got into a shouting match with Piers Morgan, who's one of the judges. And so he stormed off the stage. And then after Earl died, he wrote this very sweet piece where he said, you know, I was channeling you, Grandpa, when I told the judges, you know, to go F themselves. That was like you and the umpires.
That's great. Awesome. We're talking with John W. Miller. The book is The Last Manager. It's how Earl Weaver tricked, tormented, and reinvented baseball. Give me one of the tricked aspects. It was kind of, I think you're referring to maybe how he got into the managerial business in the first place, but you explain it to me.
That's a good question. The strategic part of it is what I was thinking of. I mean, he was always coming up with tricks that nobody had thought of before. For example, he would take his best pinch hitter and bat the guy lead off playing shortstop, and then just put in his shortstop in the bottom of the first. His rationale being a pinch hitter is worth as much in the first as in the ninth. Why not just have this guy start the game off, try to get a hit? And then you put in Mark Belanger, who's a terrible hitter at shortstop.
Right.
And it's the same thing as batting the guy in the ninth. So he was always coming up with like new devices, and he also wants he would have a pitcher in the DH spot far down in the order. And when that DH spot came up, so this would be like a guy in his off day, he would just pick the guy he wanted to actually hit in that at bat. So if the other team changed pitchers or the situation changed, he would basically have a blank slate at DH.
That's awesome.
And nobody had thought of this. And they actually changed the rule. They said that you start at DH, he has to have one at bat.
Serious baseball guy, which people, as I said, people think of the clown. We have the greatest Oriole fan that I've ever come in contact with, our executive producer, Josh Soroka, who I know has a better depth of knowledge about Orioles baseball than any of us. So, Josh, I'll kick it over to you to talk to John.
Well, I came after Earl Weaver.
You did? Yeah, because you're a young guy.
There was his return in the 80s when I was a kid. But I hear Jim Palmer talk all the time about how much he respects Earl Weaver, and at the same time sharing stories about him and Earl Weaver just getting into it in the dugout.
They didn't like each other. Well, Jim Palmer was the anti-Earl, to be honest with you.
Yes, different. And the photos of them two crack me up because Jim Palmer's got a good 18 inches on Earl.
And he's good looking, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just completely different guys. How was, when you researched player relationships with Earl, I know they all respect him because he's got that winning path. Are there guys out there that just can't get past the relationships?
Yeah, that's a good question. The first thing I want to say, I'm 47, so I grew up in the 80s too, kind of after Earl Weaver was at his peak. And
not me.
I felt like it was like living in Rome in the 5th century and reading about Julius Caesar. I mean, this was like a guy who was on top of the baseball world. And, you know, here I am struggling through the 1988 season where the Orioles lost their first 21 games.
Sure.
And I'm reading about this guy, and the Orioles were the best team in baseball in the 70s. They won the most games. And so I just was insanely curious about how that happened. Anyway, to Josh's question, it was very complicated with the players, very complicated with Jim Palmer. He didn't talk to them, and he sort of treated them with almost contempt, but he didn't hold a grudge. He treated people a lot like men. Very interesting conversation about black players and race with Ken Dixon, who pitched for the Orioles in the 80s. And Kenny told me that other, you know, older white coaches would sort of talk down to him and be condescending. Whereas Earl, I mean, he would curse at you. But Kenny said he treated me like a man. And so Earl grew up in a very racist environment. And as a young man, he used the N-word. I mean, but he evolved. He helped Frank Robinson become the first black manager. Eddie Murray loved him. Ken Singleton loved him. Ken Dixon loved him. And so because he had this integrity to him, that's what I want to get at, this integrity that even though he was ornery, he was prickly, he was difficult to deal with, he was true to himself and he didn't lie. He didn't make promises he couldn't keep. And so a lot of players, they'd be in conflict with him over the years and like not really appreciating him. But at the end of their careers, they look up and say, well, we won with this guy. He didn't play any games. He treated me with respect in his own way. He didn't go behind my back. He didn't rip me to the media. And Palmer credits him for being in the Hall of Fame, even though they had this, you know, love, hate. I call them frenemies in the book. And Palmer, you know, he grew up so wealthy, he learned how to play baseball by playing catch with his butler. And so, you know, here's Palmer.
I didn't know that about Jim Palmer.
Here's
that's
Palmer.
A factoid that I love, John. That's amazing.
And like, you know, Upper West Side of New York City, like he's like a real rich kid. and here's Earl from the hard streets of St. Louis. And, you know, of course they weren't going to get along. It was a class difference, a height difference, but it was so iconic, their relationship. They even wrote a whole book about it called, or Palmer did, called Together We Were 11 Feet Nine.
You know, as I listen to you talk about this, I begin to drift off into the entire concept of coaching, not necessarily just baseball, but managing in baseball. When you're talking about the integrity and you're talking about, you hear a lot about relationships and winning coaches having an honest, direct approach to their players. And in baseball, I think no better sport for that than a baseball manager, because these guys, you got so many personalities, so many egos that have been at the top of their game all through every level they played on. The guys that, you know, the word that comes to mind is the balls to just head on deal with these guys. You had to, there's a lot of courage involved in being a successful manager, isn't there?
That's correct. That's a very good point. And, you know, as part of the book, I live in Pittsburgh, and I would go down to the stadium whenever a visiting team was in town and interview their manager. So I interviewed a dozen current managers and had them reflect on Earl's legacy, had them reflect on what you just said and the job. And one question I asked each of them is, how has this job changed and how has it stayed the same since?
I'd love to hear the answer to that.
Since you were a kid, Mike. So how it's changed is that they now see themselves as middle managers. They're part of these sprawling org charts. They travel with like 75 people, including psychiatrists or therapists, trainers, agents are always there. And they're in the middle of it, trying to like juggle everything. Like if a player has a bad game, gets hurt, the agent will call. You know, it's all this other stuff to deal with, to the point where, you know, maybe Billy Martin or Weaver wouldn't have wanted to deal with this stuff. Okay, but how has it stayed the same? And Craig Counsell told me this, the current manager of the Cubs. He said, you're still dealing with young men with dreams, and they're still like going to have their hearts broken or succeed. And they're still very fragile beneath all the bluster and all the egos. They're fragile and they need support. They need somebody to talk to. And so you're there to help them. And Jim Leland told me this. Jim said, the thing you have in common is not changed is you have to love the players. You have to have this deep respect for what they do, their talent, their athleticism. And Earl had that. Earl was an almost major leaguer. You know, one major league spring training, cut on the last day. And so he sort of knew where the bar was, because as I said in the book, he was the bar. He anybody better than Earl Weaver was a big leaguer. And so Earl had this appreciation, this respect for big league baseball players that translated into this integrity, and he knew what they could do.
You know, if you're going to be a baseball manager, I totally agree with the idea of loving the players is so very, very important. If you're going to be a successful GM, I think the opposite might be true. Because really, when you think about it, the real cold as ice decisions where these are pawns, numbers, that comes from the GM's office. And it's not necessarily a symbiotic relationship between a general manager and a manager. How did Earl handle the front office? I would assume it might have been a little hands-off because of his overwhelming success and his popularity.
I mean, back then, this is part of the book too, and this is why this book is called The Last Manager, which obviously is not a literal statement. It's an argument. And the argument is that they were much bigger operators within the game. They were kind of like, I mean, they would have sometimes more responsibility, more power than the GM. The GM, you know, in the early days, like in the 40s, 50s, 60s, he was the guy who organized the train schedules and would, you know, sign the contracts for the concessions. So the first powerful GM was actually Harry Dalton, probably, who was the guy who hired Earl Weaver for the Orioles in 1968. But the managers in the 70s would have more say in trades. They had more say in how the team was run. And I'm actually wearing my Eddie Murray jersey because it was Eddie Murray's birthday yesterday.
What a player. I mean, as a Red Sox fan, I have to tell you, I go down the list of the guys that played for Earl. Eddie Murray at the top of the list. Just not only a great player, but a great personality.
I have an Eddie Murray story that answers your question.
And awesome.
In 1977, Eddie Murray came up with the Orioles in spring training and absolutely raked, had everything in sight. But he was only 21 years old. And Hank Peters, the general manager, he said, you know, I think we should send this guy down to AAA. And Earl said, you know, if he doesn't go north with the team, I'm not going north. So basically he put his career, his job on the line to have Eddie Murray stay with the Orioles. And Hank Peters folded. He said, okay, Earl, you're the boss. And Eddie went north and was rookie of the year. And by the way, Earl is the classic, again, trick. The DH was a new position then. It was only 4 years old. And all the DHs were these old guys, old sluggers. and nobody had ever thought about having a young guy DH. Well, Earl wanted to break Eddie in and not give him the pressure of playing defense. So he started in the first half of the season at DH. He was everyday DH for a 21-year-old. That was unheard of. The second half of the season started playing first base and eventually became the Orioles full-time first baseman. But he started that Rookie of the Year campaign as a DH. And that was entirely Earl's idea, even to keep him on the team and to DH him.
You know, the tormented part of the book, when you're talking about, and we've talked about an awful lot except for the arguments, but when I see an Earl Weaver argument, especially the classic that the video surfaces all the time, you're here for one reason and one reason only. There is a theatrical element to this that that rivals professional wrestling. But when you watch it, even if it was theatrical, you know at the core, he's pissed. He's pissed. And when you hear the relationships that umpires, would it be safe to say umpires today have to be a little more careful and managers have to be a little bit more careful? Because those are, you know, those are arguments where the umpires just deliberately ramping up the managers. Yeah. And in Earl's case, you know, what'd you get that for? Effing up World Series? I mean, it was amazing. He was an entertainer when it came to that stuff.
Yeah. And the baseball writer Peter Pascarelli once said, Earl walking out to argue with an umpire was like Elvis walking out in Las Vegas.
So true.
Crowd. Yeah.
He'd get ovations in visiting ballparks, right?
It was like professional wrestling. He was the heel. He would come out. Method was a mixture of things. Like, he would obviously blow his top and be angry, and he had this kind of darkness to him that never really went away, and that he would lose it. He also cared about winning, and he also had a strategic element where he knew it would deflect attention and pressure from the players. And he also wanted to put on a show. And once in a while, he would just tell his coach before going out, you know, watch this. And he would jab his hat down in his head to like make it firmer. So he called it beaking. He'd beak the umpire in the chest. And he would do amazing stunts. Like, he once tore up a rule book on the field, threw it all over the field. He once threw an umpire out of a game. He once sat on home plate like a Buddha. The umpire once offered him a rule book, and Earl said, "I can't read your rule book." And the umpire said, "Why not?" And Earl said, "Because it's in Braille."
That's just classic. And, you know, the word Napoleonic gets thrown around because Earl was such a tiny guy. I too remember him standing next to Palmer and Doug DeSensei and Mark Belanger and, you know, Don Baylor, these legends. And he's a teeny tiny guy, but, you know, he didn't get the Napoleonic complex that much. He was a good manager.
And I don't think, by the way, I don't think Napoleon would have been a nickname he would have hated. He didn't mind like being called Ayatollah or Son of Sam.
Sure.
For younger viewers, is a reference to a serial killer. But the nickname he really hated was Mickey Rooney. He was a Hollywood actor in the old days. He was very short, and the umpires would say, you know, Rooney, get the hell out of here. And that would really piss Earl off.
That's awesome.
You know, the Howler Hot Mic, I have a whole chapter about it because it's such an iconic baseball, you know, scene.
Right.
The TV crew, and I talked to the TV crew, and they were doing a series about umpires before the game. And the umpire forgot to take his mic off. And so when Earl went out there and they were packing up their equipment, and they were like, no, wait, we gotta hear this. And it was so incredible. They never heard anything like it. And they got the tape, and the Orioles PR guy, John Blake, was so panicked. He saw what had happened. He tried to wrestle the tape away from the sound guy, who I'm told was named Cheese Man, and Cheese Man said, "You ain't getting this effing tape." And so they went back to the studio, and it went viral 80s style, where there was like a bootleg tape that every sports writer had. They would play it at winter meetings. And somebody who heard that tape was Ron Shelton, the Hollywood screenwriter and director. And Ron told me he used that argument to write the scene in Bull Durham where Kevin Costner fights with the umpire. As soon as they start responding to each other, that's when it becomes theater. It's like they have their roles, they have their lines, and they're bouncing off each other. And that tension is theatrical. And that argument, you know, again, everybody should watch it without their children. It's over 3 minutes long. It's like a whole scene.
It is. It really is.
Well, it's like you said, Shakespearean. It all sort of fits in under that Shakespearean umbrella. I have a question. Obviously, Earl sort of bridged two eras of baseball because he was at it for so long. And now they're starting to look at the game of baseball. They have the pitch clock, and they're trying to reinvent it. But the most exciting thing in baseball now is the Savannah Bananas. Do you think there's room in the modern era for them to loosen up and return to where they're... I mean, there were personalities, even I remember, not a sports fan, like Tommy Lasorda and Billy Martin. They weren't famous, but they could, like, get on Fantasy Island. So, I mean, are we going to start seeing personalities in the game again?
I think Savannah Bananas is absolutely essential for baseball and for keeping baseball alive and healthy in the culture, because it can't just be like, you know, algorithms and mm-hmm. You know, and I love strategic baseball, and I coach high school baseball, and I love statistics. I love all that stuff, but the show is important too. And Earl,
yeah. Amen.
He grew up and younger viewers don't know about this, but the Gas House Gang was this famous team in the 1930s that was so eccentric. They had their own country band. And
was when that they Cleveland? Was that Cleveland?
St. Louis.
St. Louis. Okay.
And,
St.
And when
Louis,
they went on the road, they would play march from their train station to the hotel playing music. And in the off season, they played vaudeville, which was a sort of traveling theater circuit.
Yes.
And Frankie Frisch, the manager, he said, "I feel like we travel with more instruments than baseball equipment." And because they would be on these 15-hour train rides, you know, from St. Louis to New York, and they'd have to entertain themselves. There was no recorded music, no electronic music. And so they would play music themselves. And so Earl's dad did the laundry for the Gas House Gang. So Earl grew up in this culture of baseball's putting on a show.
It should happen.
That was deep within him of the fans have paid their $3, whatever. They deserve to be entertained.
That's awesome. I have to, you know, when we're talking about the entertainment factor, as a purist, there are a couple of things. We had the manager of the Bananas on, and it was an interesting discussion, and I agree with you. Adding to Rob's question, as far as the entertainment aspect, is there a chance that we will see a hybrid? I don't want to say that. Because as a purist, Josh and I have both talked to each other about not liking to watch the Bananas.
Don't
like
the golden bat.
But I think we desperately need in sports like golf and baseball, some of these, we need an infusion of personality. Mm-hmm. And you teach NFL, NBA, baseball players, you have people that say, this is how you behave, this is how you manage your money, this is what you want to avoid, you want to do that. Don't you? I think maybe if we implemented a little, remember your entertainers, show a little life out there, show a little personality. I don't know how you get there with the way baseball is right now, how you bridge that gap between the Savannah Bananas insanity and, you know, the swagger of baseball players just walking around and trying to look cool.
It's tricky, and the answer has to do with money, I think. I mean, I used to cover corporations for the Wall Street Journal, and anytime you have a lot of money at stake, the guy at the top is very paranoid about anybody saying anything that's going to reflect badly on the brand or the company.
Yep.
And so the player who's making his $5 million, I mean, he might be really funny and charismatic and provide great copy 100 days a year, but it's the one day where he says something stupid, and we all say dumb things sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that then becomes a problem, an image problem for the whole baseball club or organization. So then the manager, the general manager says, well, no, you know, you say these 7 cliches and go home. And one thing I loved about this project was I interviewed these ball players from the 70s, you know, guys who were in their 60s, 70s, and they didn't care. They were happy to just tell the stories and be honest and talk about, you know, the drinking and the fights, whatever it was.
Right.
And I just loved it. I thought it was so refreshing. I've been in current major league clubhouses, and it's mostly very boring. I mean,
it's so dull.
They just say the same stuff over and over again.
Well, I've watched spring training evolve over the years down here in Fort Myers, where it used to be the starters. You could literally walk up to the guys, and now it's kind of like, you know, it coincides with the netting that went up around the entire ballpark. You know, there's that barrier now between the fans and the players. Josh, I'm going to give you the last question because you are the Oriole fan of Oriole fans.
And I wanted to add to what you're saying, because in Baltimore, we saw a little bit of that personality come out with Buck Showalter.
Yep.
In the post game
old school
conferences with that old school move. And I think we're seeing that move right now in Baltimore, with there are so many young guys on the team and young players that have grown up with social media and kind of understand that relationship, that's where you're going to see more baseball personalities come out.
I think on the field too.
I think you're seeing it on the field a little bit, because at least in Baltimore, because they're all 22-year-olds that have been friends for years, and you're seeing that friendship, and that's exciting younger Oriole fans with some personality. I find it very interesting that outside of Baltimore, Earl is known for these rants and raves. And in Baltimore, there's so much respect with still growing tomatoes in Camden Yards for him.
Yep.
And talking about what makes a good manager and always focusing on that pitch and defense in the 3-run homer. That's something that then every manager relies on, because, or is that just a Baltimore thing that I grew up with that ingrained in me?
I mean, no, he changed the strategic direction of the sport. I mean, basically every manager after Earl has tried to manage like Earl. I mean, in the book, I say he made his own job obsolete, because after Earl, you could just program a computer to manage like Earl, because he was so right about so many things. I mean, he prioritized on base percentages in the 1960s. He realized that intentional walks and bunts were not winning strategies. Early in his career, he actually bunted a lot, partly because he had Mark Belanger, who was a terrible hitter. But he just, like, what was amazing about
it's
him.
A second dig on Mark Belanger, John, that you've got.
I think Mark Belanger.
I smell that you might not like Belanger.
I think Belanger should be in the Hall of Fame. Here's my,
oh,
that's my,
okay. All right.
That's my controversial take.
Third, there you go.
He's the third best defender by defensive wins above replacement of all time.
Mm-hmm.
But back to Josh's point. Yeah, I mean, Earl evolved. And that's what's also incredible about him as a character, is that he was always thinking about things, adapting. The first time that women came into the clubhouse, he didn't react well. He evolved. He'd apologize. He got to know them. Like, he just was always like reconsidering himself.
Get that skirt out of here. Yeah, get that skirt out of here now.
Yeah. But he had a capacity for self-reflection. That's why, you know, his memoir is called "It's What You Learn After You Know It All That Counts."
Yeah.
And so, managers, I mean, they all revere Earl still. Like, these conversations I had in the clubhouses a couple years ago, they all still see him as a winner. And that's the thing too. They also talk about his passion for winning. And that's the human element that transcends the statistics and the strategy. I mean,
yep.
He had this singular focus, and he cared so much. And I think that's what's so cool about him, is that as a leader, he could be messy. He could pass out, you know, drunk, but because he cared so much, he would inspire people to play well. And you know, when you were a kid, he came back in 85 and 86, Josh, he had lost that passion, and he had stopped caring, and those teams were not successful.
Yeah.
And it really highlights also how great he was in the 70s when he was at the top of his game, when he did care.
That is that's a great way to end it here. And the book is The Last Manager, John W. Miller. I mean, I just think that what a great subject and a
wonderful,
great book about an American original unlike any other, and one of the best figures, not in just baseball, but all of sport. The book is fantastic. Good luck with it. I don't think you need any luck. And I would say, let's go O's, but I have no intention of saying that on this show.
Let's go O's. Josh, like say,
let's go O's.
I think we'll convert that into a button now. I'll pull that audio.
John W. Miller, thanks for joining us and talking about Earl Weaver. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
That's John Miller, and you know, and by the way,
miss.
John Miller, another John Miller, a great voice of the Orioles, who I
yes.
knew, and John Miller, who does to this day one of the best impressions of Vin Scully, who's no longer
oh,
with
wow.
us.
Oh, wow!
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I love
the
baseball.
Book is a great book, but Miller did miss one thing. Is I really thought in the dedication he would tell Alice Sweet the right time to put in a tomato.
I'm not a fan of that tape. I am a fan, as you know, always.
I know.
Of the and maybe on the bonus show this week we can just revisit that wonderful. You're here for one reason and one reason. It's the great. I think the greatest baseball argument I've ever seen. It's fantastic.
I do like the manager's corner because it was just passed around on audio tape.
Yeah, and it was it was him doing shtick, just pure
showed
shtick.
How people just loved the guy.
But
right.
Even as shtick, he's one of the best users of swear words I've ever heard.
They all, in those days,
they
those
knew
guys
how to do it. Wow.
Could paint. And by the way, if Earl was here, he would love Josh dropping his consonants. Just wanted to say that. We have to take a break. Okay. Yes. Yes, Josh, you were going to add something.
Oh, I was going to say, go out to Camden Yards and stand by those statues, and you can see how small Earl was.
He was a little guy. Elfin-like is what he was.
I think with the statues, Palmer's got his leg kicked up like in his pitching motion, and I think his leg is above Earl's head.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely true. We'll take a break. Come back with the roundtable right here on the Mike O'Mara Show. You know, who doesn't hate garbage? I hate garbage. But I love rubbish. I do. I really do, ladies and gentlemen. I love rubbish. Please, my dear, let me explain. This podcast is sponsored by Rubbish, the ultimate garbage bags that make trash day way better. Please understand, you'll take out the trash 8,000 times in your life. Why not do it with compostable, non-toxic, PFAS-free bags that also give back? Rubbish donates 10% of their bags to charity and adds a fresh, funny saying in every box to make trash day less miserable. These bags aren't just good, they're superior. We're the bag half full. That's the same bag you had yesterday.
It's a different bag. I think it's the same joke on the per box.
Per box, one joke? I didn't know that. Okay, I only took the first bag out. You can waste $20 on Thai food you dislike or spend way less for top-tier garbage bags with built-in comedy with every pull. Easy choice, yes? No? Yes, no?
No, yes.
You deserve the best garbage bags money can buy, so Rubbish created them. Rubbish is running a 30% off sale, and you can get an extra 5% off by going to rubbishhome.com and using the code TMOS. That's an extra 5% off for a total of 35% off your order.
Yes.
If you go to rubbishhome.com and use our promo code, you know it, you love it. That, of course, is TMOS, ladies and gentlemen.
Mike, I don't think I would be doing my job if I didn't show you Clownvis.
Wow. Robert, there's
Awareness on your part, being the Elvis fan you are, of Clownvis?
I don't think he makes the national tour. I've not seen him yet. But
Clownvis.
Clownvis. I would be curious to know how his shtick goes and if he's a live band or a karaoke guy.
I bet he's a killer. I bet he's got Cinder jeans. He's an entertainer.
I hope he's coming by Leesburg.
Yeah, he might come to my house.
That's the only thing that would get Rob to go, probably. He'd have to be in Leesburg. Rob's a traditionalist. Like, we're purists with baseball. Rob is a purist with Elvis impersonators.
Well, no, I mean, I'm going all the way to another state this Friday, you know.
To see?
Dean Z. Yeah.
Well, you can head on over to Fort Wayne, Indiana, Cleveland, Ohio, or Granite City, Illinois.
Oh, I'll definitely do Granite City. That's a great venue.
Only the big places. That's it. Maria Shriver pays no mind to her son's more risque moments as an actor. While attending a charity function, she reacted to her son, Patrick Schwarzenegger. By the way, the second episode of the season two of The White... Is it season three or season three?
Season three.
Yeah,
season three of White Lotus. No waiting for Patrick Schwarzenegger's nude body. Anyway, he's got a lot of nudity.
What is the thing that your son shows most often on White Lotus?
Well, in the particular third episode, Da Ass... yeah, so he's out
then,
there.
Right.
Yeah.
Then some movement later.
Yeah, a little. He lets it all hang out there.
That character's burning on me.
Is burning on me.
Yes,
Shriver told People, my kids were like, did you see that? And I was like, no, what? She said she was only focused on her son's face. That makes sense. And never looked any lower.
He's got an ass face.
No, it's not a lie. She said, it shows you a mother's eyes are always. What?
You can't miss his naked body.
Well, I know. She's just being respectful. That's what my mom would say. Of course, I would never be nude in the TV show.
I only look, I mean, that makes sense. I only look at the face of the lady with the teeth.
By the way, I will say this publicly.
Yes.
I looked at that ass so closely. To see, you know, I looked down.
If it was, if he got it from his mom or his dad.
Oh, but I thought you were checking for cleanliness.
I was. I mean, I looked down there and it's like, that looks a little weird down there. I don't know. So it shows you, as she says, a mother's eyes are always on the kid's eyes. I don't know.
Well, you know what Dad used to say? Don't waste water.
Yeah, come on. No need. Get a clear ear. She says, I think it's a great moment for him, and I'm super happy for him. Well, she is, because he's in a big hit TV show that in season three has jumped the shark.
I will not say that yet. We'll get to it.
We'll get to it. We have a whole TV thing we're going to do. So,
and he is very mad at being called a Nepo baby.
A Nepo baby. Of course he is. I think he's earned it. He's a good actor. He's a, you know, I don't think he's a Nepo baby. I think he's
worked hard
merit.
For it.
Yeah. The 2025 Academy Award nominees are preparing for what could be many historic moments when the ceremony is broadcast live this Sunday, March 2nd on ABC. Leading the pack is Emilia Perez, a Spanish language musical crime comedy.
I've not seen that.
I looked in, haven't really plunged into it.
Okay.
But it's got 13 Oscar nominations, the most ever for a non-English language film. However, the film will be competing with Anora. Is anyone familiar with Anora? Another Best Picture nominee.
No.
That's got a lot of buzz in recent weeks. It's one of those Oscar seasons where it's like, yeah, fine. Close behind are the one I'm trying to find online, The Brutalist, you know, with Adrian Brody, and Wicked, each earning 10 nominees. I think you're going to have potentially one of the – who's hosting the Oscars this year? Do we
Conan.
Know?
Is it Conan? Yeah.
Conan's doing it. It's going to be low rated. I'm sorry. I don't think
well,
people
there's,
are going to watch
when-
it.
The movie industry has crumbled, so there's not a lot of places where you share movies. There's not a lot of tentpole blockbusters anymore.
Well, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, but there aren't this year in particular.
Wasn't there an award show like this past weekend on Netflix?
Yeah, there was the Screen Actors Guild Awards.
Yeah.
SAG Awards.
Yeah.
Another moment belongs to first-time nominee Demi Moore, who won both a Golden Globe and a SAG Award for Best Actress for The Substance. Now, The Substance, which... Her acting chops are on full display, but then it just gets too weird.
Yeah, and
it
also
it just gets too weird for me.
With
you know?
What they do to her in that, no spoilers, but she's not acting for the last hour of the movie.
No, it's
half
special effects.
Yeah, it's all special effects. But
it would
she's
be her
very
first
good
actor,
up front
though,
and still lovely.
Her Oscar.
So,
yeah, it would be her first Oscar if they.
She earns
she,
it. She's earned
she
it
wins,
through the
and
years,
we'll
I
see.
Think.
Yeah, I'd like to see somebody that's been in the game a long time.
She made Striptease.
She what?
She made Striptease. It's a good movie.
You like that, huh?
I actually never seen it.
All right. Today is a historic day. I always say it's an historic day.
I think that's the way I do it. I think that's
right. The Price is Right is airing its 10,000th episode. To mark that milestone, they are giving away $90,000 in cash and prizes.
That's stupid.
Don't you think it should be more?
Should be $100,000.
Should be $1 million.
No, it should be $10 million if it's 10,000 episodes.
Thank you. I agree. In a teaser for the episode, announcer George Gray shows off a huge multi-layered cake that pays tribute to some of the show's most popular games. He and Drew Carey also reveal that over the course of the show, 75,000 people have been called to come on down. And contestants have walked away with more than $300 million in cash and prizes. Obviously not another million going out now.
No.
Mr. Beast should not be giving away more money than The Price is Right.
No, I agree with you.
No, you
got
guys,
a nice cut in my mouth.
It's
sorry
staring
about
you in the face. It's a CBS production.
Cheap.
Yeah, cheap. Yeah.
I mean, everything's made of wood on the set.
Right.
The
you
show
said the wheel
itself.
Was like cardboard behind it,
was,
right?
It was plywood. It was a plywood wheel.
Unpainted plywood, much of the stuff, but when you saw the back. But... I like Drew Carey, and I think he's a fine host, but they've destroyed the game from what it used to be. For example, there's only like 85 people in the audience now, which they started because of COVID, and so the audience looks wrong. They've got male models showing the... I'll take
question for you, Rob Spiewak, Mr. Game Show connoisseur.
Yeah.
Who's done more damage to the brand? Drew Carey with The Price is Right or Ryan Seacrest with Wheel of Fortune?
Ryan.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But
Drew
what
Carey,
about Wayne Brady and Let's Make a Deal?
No, that's not.
Well Let's Make a Deal is a, I'm sorry, almost a bad word. It's an S game show to begin with.
It is. Drew Carey says, hosting the show has been, quote, one of the best experiences of my professional life. No matter how my day is, as soon as I get to The Price is Right and walk through the door, it all goes away. It's just vibing all day long. I would imagine of all the game shows, that's got to be an absolute blast to
and
do.
And hard because, you know, you have to know and explain like 100 different pricing games. It's not easy.
No, I'm not really sure I would describe it as hard.
No,
and I'm sure
mean,
he's got an earpiece and cue cards and commercial
breaks to
learn.
Yeah, and I mean, after you explain you know, hole in one,
well, that's
mountain
easy.
Climber.
Explain Lucky Seven to me.
Okay. Well, by the time you do it for the 50th time, Rob, it's not hard.
They
anymore.
Go to a commercial break. He goes and looks at the rules and comes on out.
Listen, yeah. I'm not an apologist for the Drew Carey.
No, but it's not a hard gig.
It's easier than any
Jeopardy
other
is a hard gig.
No, that's all reading.
You got to know where the board is, what the question. You can't marry yourself to the cards in front of you. And you can't do it all with a prompter either.
Jeopardy is, it might be tough, but think of Jeopardy with 1,000 variations within the game. Now it's tough.
But it's a dumb game. They're dumb games.
Respect the hosts.
None of the game shows are tough to host.
Jimmy Cerrito would be happy when my son, I was playing, oh God, I forgot what the song was because I'm not an Aussie fan. I was playing an Aussie song.
Crazy
yesterday
Train?
Or today. It was not Crazy Train. It was not Mama, I'm Coming Home. Something with Tears, I think. It was something with Tears. I don't know.
Oh, No Aussie. Tears in Heaven.
No Tears in Heaven. And he said, Dad, I really like that. I said, I'm going to tell Jimmy that you like Ozzy. Ozzy Osbourne is doing a documentary for Paramount Plus called No Escape From Now. It'll premiere later this year. Ozzy says, quote, the last 6 years have been full of some of the worst times I've been through. There's been times when I thought my number was up, but making music and making two albums saved me. I'm not doing my Ozzy impression because I'm trying to be serious.
Well, I want to be able to understand it.
I've gone nuts with that music. My fans have supported me for so many years, and I really want to thank them and say a proper goodbye to them. Sharon Osbourne, I bet it was tough to get a quote from her.
She's you know what she is? Blabbermouth.
Sharon Osbourne. Sharon Osbourne. Where is it? Where is it? God damn it. Find it. Sharon Osbourne.
You are a blabbermouth.
She says the documentary shows, quote, how hard things have been for him and the courage he has shown while dealing with a number of serious health issues, including Parkinson's disease.
Yeah.
Ozzy, you know, Jimmy loves you, and a lot of people do, and hang in there, pal.
I saw preview for the documentary. He said the hardest part of his recovery was hosting The Price is Right.
You just won't let it go. You will not let it go. It is not hard. It really is. I mean, Lucky Sevens. Explain Lucky Sevens to me.
All right. There is a game where Lucky Seven is invariably a car, and they put the digits up of the car, and Bob gives you $7. And you have to guess each sequential digit, and for every one you miss it by, you have to give them $1.
Right.
And you have to have $1 left at the end
to buy the car.
Yeah. That's right.
I got
it. Really hard to explain.
Yeah, really hard.
Well, that's
really
because hard. I've been practicing.
Okay. Dreaming of someday getting that gig. I think you'd do a better job than Drew Carey.
I always thought Dave Price should have gotten that gig.
Dave, really? No.
Yes. Oh, no. Yeah. He was great with people.
Really?
Yes. I was really pulling for him. He was the weatherman on Channel 5 in New York when we were going to New York. And I thought he was sensational.
Is it Dave Price? Is that the guy? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he would have been good on it.
Yeah.
Finally today, is flirting with someone else cheating?
I don't know,
new
Darla.
Poll of 2,000 adults found half of Americans would potentially dump you for flirting. Really?
Wow.
Half? That's amazing. 51% said they might end a relationship over what someone would call harmless flirting, mm-hmm. especially if it felt like the person tried to hide it. Now, this, I believe, falls into the category of your age group and mm-hmm. your history.
Right.
There are so many mitigating circumstances with this, but let me finish the story.
All right.
60% said chatting with an ex is over the line too. I'm with that. I believe I don't trust that.
Not like business things, right? Like if you've got to figure out who has the kid or something like that, you can
do that. No, I don't think so. But I mean, if you're calling to see how you doing, you know, and it's difficult. Look, I have been in a myriad of relationship structures. I have never, ever trusted the relationship with the ex as being anything other than keeping your bases free or your options open. Your safety net.
Yeah.
23% said the same about finding out their partner had been watching porn. I get that.
Sure.
I think that people have a problem. Reading porn is apparently reading porn. What, like
that's
magazines?
That's Earl's day.
What is it? No.
That would be the books.
Duh. Sorry. I couldn't think of porn as anything else but pictures and movies.
You got to get past the pictures.
Oh, you have to go to a lady chatter's lover.
Reading porn is apparently okay. 79% said erotica books like 50 Shades of Grey are fair game. Of course, because this skews female.
Because it's it's who they surveyed.
Yeah. Most said letting someone buy you a drink is also isn't a big deal. This is totally skewing female.
Yes,
with a,
it is.
Yes, they can buy us dinner if they want. You know.
And a fur coat.
You can buy a drink, but don't get caught buying a drink for someone else.
And if they want to buy you something more, and you're the husband, for example, you know, depends on what you want to offer. You know, a new car? Yeah, go ahead. Service him.
That's way better than the drink.
That's way better, Service him. There you go. Get right to it, everybody. You know, service that man.
One time bought Carrie the book, 38. What is it? How many shades of
50
gray?
Shades of 50 gray,
Rob. 50 Shades of Gray.
Was that too hard for you?
No, he was being cheap. He bought 30 Shades of Gray.
30 Shades of Gray.
Didn't matter. She returned it the next day.
She didn't like it?
No, she finished it that fast.
She doesn't finish anything fast.
Oh, my goodness gracious. We'll be right back.
Maybe that's on me.
With more fun. Eating healthy shouldn't mean choking down bland, better for you products.
Hate bland.
Yuck. Luckily or gain, crack the code. The more letters you put in, the more I will read them.
Yeah.
Real nutrition that actually tastes amazing. It really does. We love Orgain. Their 30-gram protein shakes pack all 9 essential amino acids in for energy, muscle support, and hunger control. Whether you're team chocolate fudge or team vanilla, I've always been on team chocolate fudge.
Well, it looks like Josh is team vanilla today. How about that?
The flavor is unbeatable with just 1 gram of sugar, no soy, and 0 artificial junk. Orgain is clean, convenient fuel that actually delivers 30 grams of protein, and it tastes like a dream. Yeah, the reason I don't look like Harry Morgan is because I always drink my Orgain.
You're supposed to say Morgain.
Oh, all right.
I think I spelled it that way, didn't I?
I know. I didn't read it right. All right, here we go. Let me try it again.
All right, do it as him.
The reason I don't look like Harry Morgan is because I always drink my Orgain.
Thank you.
There, I gave you. That's what it was intended to be. Orgain 30-gram protein shakes are available at Costco and Orgain.com. If you want to get in on the action and the delicious protein-packed nutrition today, head to Orgain.com/TMOS. Once you're there, look around, say hi to Radar, and get some more gain in your cart. Then head to checkout, and when you're prompted to, use the promo code you got from Ukiah, TMOS30, for 30% off your order. Remember, for 30% off, son, head to orgain.com/TMOS, and make sure you use the promo code TMOS30 during checkout. So they know that we sent you. I don't know why he got emotional like towards the end.
I think he got emotional in a news clip once where he was accused of being beaten by his wife.
I could be wrong.
My quick technical question.
Yes, please.
I do love Harry Morgan. And one of the reasons I do love that impression of yours is that I think you're the only person I've ever heard do Harry Morgan.
Harry Morgan.
When you found it. The voice, did it have to do with saying the name Radar? Because the way you say Radar.
Sort of
going down.
No, it was one of the, like I've always said, as far as when I'm doing it because it pops in so easily. And then I just surprise myself by saying, hi, Radar. And then it used to happen on the show sometimes where we'd be talking about Harry Morgan. And I'd be like, hello, I'm Harry Morgan. And then sometimes I'll do it on this show where I say, you know, I think I do an impression of them. And it's because they come easy to me. And it's fun. I mean, I've loved that. Yeah, the late, great, so many of them, you know, Rob.
Oh, no.
As I come closer to death myself.
Well, he's dead.
More and more of my impressions are underground, and I don't mean the bad kind. I mean dead. All right, so I have to tell a story.
You're keeping them alive.
I've been doing double duty, taking care of my wife, taking care of my kid.
How is she?
She's fine.
Good.
She's getting better every single day. And the baseball schedule with minor leagues and major leagues is very, very busy. Last night, two, a game last night and a game tonight. So it's baseball, baseball, baseball. He's back at school. High academic. My kid is a little bit overwhelmed, but he's managing just fine, and I'm trying to make it as easy as possible. We had a moment, kind of a cool moment. Listen, I do not advocate this. Do not try this at home. But I will tell you, this legitimately happened, and it was coming back from the baseball game. About 8:20-ish, 8:25-ish, we're on the TAM Miami Trail. And they're, you know, blissfully at that hour, all the snowbirds, you know, have eaten their chicken fried steak, and they're all abed. Yeah. So the roads are virtually empty. And I come up, and next to me is a Camaro. And it's like,
a lot of noise. Yeah.
And my son says to me, "Dad, I think he wants to race you." And because I've got my electric car, they've got a tremendous amount of torque.
They do. Most
of your electric vehicles. And so we go off the line. And
did you rev it at all before you did it? I guess you can't with an electric car.
You can't.
That's what the not possible. There it is. There's the rev.
You just wind down your windows and you got to make the sound effects
that's
yourself.
The rev that I
vroom, vroom.
Vroom, vroom. I give a little rev and I beat him off the line, and then he just waxes me as he continues to go. So this happens. We come up to another stop. And now at this stoplight, there's a car in between us. I'm in the far left. He's in the far right. And there is nobody. Nobody. It kind of even did a sweep for any John Law that might have been. I said, all right, I'm going to really give it a go offline. Now, I don't sustain it because I think that's dangerous.
Right.
But, you know, your first little quarter mile, you know, your first little zing.
Yeah.
Let's do it again. And this time he's, you know, I hear the and off the line, I wax him again. And then he catches up to me, and Michael says, "It's a kid, Dad. It's a young kid. Looks about 19 years old." I said, "Okay." And as he goes by me, after I've beaten him off the line, I get a little thumbs up out the window. It was a little cool moment for Daddy.
Well, that's nice.
For Daddy, yeah. My kid loved it. My kid loved it.
And then he T-bones at the next intersection.
That's right.
He did. He slowed down. Then we finally come up to our street, our left-hand turn.
Yeah.
And next to me is another SUV. And I'm like, this guy too? No, I was just in – I wasn't paying attention to him like it might be any kind of race. But I am at the front of the line again. And this time it's a two-lane left-hand turn lane. And – when we get started, I still got that kind of racing bug, and I kind of kick it again.
Endorphins.
And I get waxed. Like, and I'm talking this guy.
Was it a proper SUV or a crossover?
It was a proper SUV, and
Tahoe?
I dare you to guess the SUV that off the line beat my torquey electric car.
Is it a Tahoe?
And it was not a Tahoe.
Tahoe had a great pickup,
It will surprise you as to what car it was, but this car had balls.
Ford
this
Excursion.
Car took off. It was not a Ford. They're too big.
I know.
This thing, you know, about not made anymore might be applied to this particular car, too.
Mm.
It's a common brand name.
It's a Hudson.
It is not a Hudson.
An Explorer.
It is not an Explorer. Lots of Fords, guys. Get off the Fords now.
I'm thinking that it's...
Well, they're American.
I'm trying to think. I know
this is an American brand.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was thinking that Kia brings a pretty big SUV, a nice one. So it's not... It's
what?
An Kia makes a great SUV.
What, for speed?
Well, I mean, my...
No, just for comfort.
For comfort.
Yeah, that's like saying the Price is Right is hard.
No... Don't say that. No, that's right.
Kia
has a nice SUV.
It's on my list. Do they have a powerful SUV where they sell the engine?
It's
what is it? You say yes, but what is it, Rob?
It's a V14 with a million horsepower.
You don't know what you're talking about. This thing, I mean,
I was guessing another SUV because I thought maybe your car had.
Well, that's also not an. You didn't pay attention because that's not an American car.
Okay, is it a Dodge Caravan?
That's not an SUV.
Yeah, but I'm seeing where it lands. It's guessing strategy.
I don't know what Dodge SUV. Do they make an SUV?
They did. I'm not sure if they're still
Chevy there. Suburban.
No, the Dodge was correct.
Oh, it is Dodge.
Aha. So a Dodge.
I knew this would be hard. That's why I decided to set it up this way. I know there are people probably screaming right now.
I have.
Because it has a massive engine in it.
Oh, does it got the Hemi in it? Because well, that's the Dodge
Ram,
deal?
The Ram has it, but that's a pickup, not an SUV.
This has got the Hemi in it. It's got the Hemi. That's why he waxed me off the line. Wow. And by the way, Rob will get it after this.
Okay.
It's a name of a vehicle that would be well pronounced by Jack Kent Cook.
Dodge. Durango.
Durango. Yes, sirree. It's the Dodge Durango. I was waxed by a Dodge Durango.
When I drove I had the Chrysler 300 with the Hemi. That was the car that was plowed into in front of your home.
Yes.
But occasionally, I would give it its all out of a toll booth, and it was thrilling.
If we can look up Dodge Durango, what the biggest engine is or was. I don't think. Do they make them anymore? Do they even make the Durango? Is there a 2024 or 2025 Durango?
There is a 2025 Dodge Durango.
Durango. Okay. I know that they put a biggest engine for Dodge Durango. This thing. I'm curious as to what. What is the biggest engine that they put inside the Dodge Durango?
It would be the Hellcat model.
There it is. Yep.
Can we see a photo of this, Josh?
It's going to look like a plain SUV, but it's got a big engine.
Not fancy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'll share.
Mike, it doesn't.
You're looking for the picture. I'm looking for the horsepower. There it is.
Right. Oh, it's a good looking car.
Rob's interested in the interior. There you go.
What does that even mean?
Here you go. Here's what you want. A 6.2 liter supercharged Hemi V8.
Does it say the horsepower?
710.
710. Knew it. Wow. Got it right when I said it to my kid. I said it has 700 plus horsepower.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
what's the horsepower in your electric car?
500.
Is it really that high?
Yes. Yeah. How about that, Mr. Man? Yes,
well,
sir.
Well, wasn't looking
there
for trouble.
Is. Yes, sir.
I should What's love to see these.
What's the horsepower in your Kia?
The Kia? Yeah. It's 420.
No, it's not.
It doesn't matter.
No, it's not.
Figures
you don't
bore
even know.
Me. Figures bore me.
Figures. God. Always the mouth. Ladies and gentlemen, we will take a break. And when we come back, TV Corner. We're going to talk TV when we return on the Mike O'Mara Show. But first, saddle up, everybody. All you fans of the sport of kings.
Yes.
It's Derby time. And the Mike O'Mara Show Kentucky Derby Party is racing your way. Join us Saturday, May 3rd. At 5 p.m. at Jimmy's Old Town Tavern for a night of fun, laughter, food, drinks, and of course
the big race. How many horsepower does that have?
420.
No, I would think it's 20 because they have 20.
Gentlemen
horses.
And ladies, bring your boldest, fiercest, most fabulous hats. That's right, men and women. We are going to have a legendary bisexual.
No.
We're going to have a legendary multisexual ladies' hat contest.
I think disexual might be it.
Disexual.
Asexual?
No. I don't know. Think big, feathered, and fabulous. Fruit optional, but encouraged.
I think inclusive is the word.
Whatever. The best part, it's free. So mark your calendars, rally your crew, and RSVP now. The horses are at the track. Yeah, we want men and women to wear their best ladies' hats. I want my vision is this. We get there, and some of the stragglers are still coming in, and they're making their way from all directions to Jimmy's Corner Restaurant in Herndon, Virginia, with their big, beautiful hats on. That will be my moment of zen. That will be my moment where I'm most happy to see that. So, men and women, if you're coming, please don't let me down. We'll have a fabulous prize package for the best hat. And we'll have a men and women's category, too.
Oh, good. All right? Good.
All this Kentucky talk takes me back to my childhood, growing up in Fort Knox. Oh, for a slice of possum and yam.
See you Saturday, May 3rd at Jimmy's Old Town Tavern. And remember, don't get happy.
Don't.
People can call Jimmy's at 703-435-JIMS or write this email down.
Yes.
Danielle.JimmysOldTownTavern@gmail.com for your reservations. And we thank you, ladies and gentlemen. All right, it's time to do. We tried to do this yesterday. We never got around to it. I want to do it today. TV talk. We mentioned The White Lotus before. A really, really good franchise that in season three, I wish this was the bonus show because I would say, what the F? What's going on?
It's horrible. Start.
We're in season three. I mean, we're in episode three, and it's like, Bleck, come on now.
Well, they have to, Mike. The way the show is constructed with, you know, very loosely related seasons, they can't really have a plot arc, so they've got to lay down the stuff early on.
But nothing happened in season two. I get that there's a lot of little setups, and hopefully they build on those.
Yeah,
but there was nothing.
There was the death of the lady.
Yeah, but you had Christopher from The Sopranos, and you had F. Murray Abraham.
Right.
And you had the pretty good-looking hookers that were in there. All right, let me give you the characters here. You got the family with the crooked financial guy.
The Ratcliffe.
And Patrick Schwarzenegger. Mm-hmm. There's just nothing there.
Something's going on with the dad.
I know something's going on with the dad, but the characters leave me cold. I hope the characters.
I hope something happens to Patrick because I'm so tired of that character.
I am tired of that character.
He's way too creepy.
Do you hate the mother like I do, too?
Oh, yeah.
Love the mother.
I mean, she's drugged out.
Yeah, because she is so real life to like so many mothers I see around here. It is such a great skewering of...
I get it.
She's great at it.
I understand what you're
like
saying.
I get it. I love the character.
You love to hate her, and she is phenomenal at that. When she does the scene where the California girl walks up to her and she's just being cold.
Yes.
It is so, there are so many people like that.
Cringe.
So that's good. I'm going to give you the thumbs up on that one. But really, I'm ready for Walton Goggins' character to, by my favorite celebrity name now. I'm ready for something. And do you think he's a hitman? Is he going to murder somebody? Is that what he's going to do?
I think he's going to either murder the owner of the resort or her husband.
I think
probably the husband.
I think the husband is his dad. That's what I'm thinking.
All right. Well,
and also, you can't tell me you're not slightly intrigued by the massage therapist recognizing Uncle Rico. That's a pretty good plot line. Because he's totally reinvented his life.
The only carryover from last season.
Yeah, but it's a good one. And also, you got to admit, even when it's nothing's happening, it's a beautiful show to watch.
And
it is so well done.
I'm staying with it. I'm not
I think Uncle Rico is involved in that robbery.
Oh, with the
I think it was a setup.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I like Mook too. Mook is the girlfriend of the guy that runs the traffic lift arm. She was that's the character. There's that.
Mook, the lady that works at the resort.
Yeah, the sort of a blossoming romance. I don't know how he's going to get screwed up.
I love that romance. It's a sweet romance, and I root for them. I really do.
My prediction is he gets involved in nefarious activity to get money to impress her as the season goes on.
Interesting. Okay, well, it sounds like we're not dissing it. It sounds like we are. We wish it was more exciting now, but we're all sticking with it, right?
Yeah, and Mike. Yes. Even more exciting than that, 182 horsepower in the Subaru Outback.
I looked up my truck, too. It's 200.
I would really like to find out, as far as Kia SUVs, you got what, the Soul? You've got
There's a big one.
It's
can't think
Telluride.
Of the name.
The Telluride.
The Telluride is huge. Like
what's the biggest horsepower in that? I'd like to know that. But the other show I wanted to talk about that I am all in, haven't finished it.
291.
291 is the max?
Yes.
Okay,
Telluride. Wow.
There's your Kia. who cares? I don't care.
I don't either.
The Pit. Noah Wiley.
Mm-hmm.
The Pit is...
I started it yesterday.
It's jive. It's actory. You know what I mean? But it's interesting because when they write for doctors... It's hard to do, to get all the jargon, to get all the procedures, and this thing is just jam-packed with it.
It's ER like one after all the over other. Again.
It is better. It's like ER with more substance.
And I really thought that whole comparison to ER right down to the leading man would bother me, but two episodes in, I'm loving it. It is such good television.
I am 20 minutes in because we started the first episode yesterday, and as soon as that second victim came in and they ripped up the cover and the legs just all torn up, Kelly couldn't handle it, so it was shut down. You're watching this on your own.
There you go. Well, that so happens.
There's some good. There's a wonderful little subplot later on about a guy who loses the tip of his finger that I see way too more of that I want.
Okay, so let me just share this. So we both give thumbs up White Lotus and The Pitt, two great shows.
Yeah.
The other thing I just wanted to bring up generically here, is it me or is there just very little material out there right now?
Nothing right now.
No, nothing.
We're ridiculous, and I'm tired of it. When I turn on the show where somebody says, the murderer's here, and then the voice goes, and I know immediately that it's that
the most
foreign
thing.
I'm so sick of that. I'm ready. I'm starving. America is starving for television content.
I was gonna save this for the flip side. No, what do we call it now? Yes, the
video.
The
nice
beautiful video.
Video
segment. But there is now, they're going to launch this on Apple TV, an ER-based drama. They call it in Germany, Crank Berlin. But it actually translates.
It's a German ER?
It's Berlin ER.
Real or documentary or?
Neue Chefärztin,
but it's born.
Scripted.
Das Krankenhaus hat 618 Betten und rund 30.000 stationäre Patienten im Jahr.
Mach es raus!
Understand.
300 Ärzte, 600 PflegerInnen.
Ja, wir sind zu wenige, immer.
Overfill.
Wenn es brennt, hat die Rettungsstelle 250 Patienten. Wenn es richtig brennt, über 300.
Sie kriegen das hier alles auf die Reihe. Ist das die neue Chefin?
Ja, Ben, das ist deine neue Chefin.
Wenn ich einmal ganz kurz Ihre Aufmerksamkeit haben dürfte, bitte.
Overworked.
That even their lead looks like Noah Wiley.
Yeah,
it is such a ripoff,
and it's the same angles as The Pitt.
All right, well, give us more. Give us more. And I want to watch. Yes, go ahead.
The only show we're watching now together is Matlock, and we're
Matlock
enjoying
it. Matlock is great.
It's very good.
See, that's you two bonding. I think that's fantastic. Matlock,
I think even you would like it. Mike?
I give it. It's a nice mix and spin. It's a fun little show. Mm-hmm.
Carl and I only measure our television dramas by one scale. It's the jive scale. How jive is it?
I would say it gets, I'd give it a four and a half on the jive scale.
Yeah, it's kind of in the middle.
But there's a lot of solid content to back it up. It's as a courtroom procedural, it's hard to beat because the writing is.
Is there any nudity from Kathy Bates?
Yes, but only lower nudity.
Okay, thank you for that. Thank you.
It's good writing and completely different than what you expect.
Yeah.
Well, I'll watch that tonight.
He won't.
No.
I know you. He
tried to help you.
I know you.
We'll take a break and then come back with some beautiful video.
It's gorgeous.
And more fun and thrills. I'll watch Kathy Bates. We'll be right back, everybody. Should be fun. Should be. Every time you play that music, I always think it's a Taster's Choice commercial.
Well, it is the Taster's Choice jingle, but I think it's good coffee music.
Is that the real Taster's Choice music?
It is a recreation. A guy covered it and put it on YouTube.
We're talking about Charlie's Choice, the perfect combination of...
What is it?
Charlie's Choice!
Charlie's Choice. I want to tell you about our perfect combo.
Mm-hmm.
TMOS coffee in your TMOS coffee mug. While listening to TMOS, start your morning right now with a bold cup of Charlie's Choice coffee, because great coffee and great company, like us, go hand in hand.
Nice.
Don't just drink coffee, experience it. We all know that you got to have coffee. What was that, Rob? Can you play it again?
Yummy!
So, make it Charlie's Choice.
He loves it.
Coffee. Yes. Charlie's Choice.
Charlie's Choice.
Charlie's Choice.
Yeah. Charlie's Choice coffee. Charlie's Choice is available in whole bean or fresh. You missed the other one.
You're reading
Charlie's
fast.
Charlie's Choice.
Or fresh ground. Get a one-time order or save money with a subscription. A lot of people are doing that. And get our exclusive Charlie's Choice.
Charlie's Choice.
Blend delivered right to your door. Charlie's Choice.
Charlie's
I wrote
Choice
the coffee. I should
is
know this.
Slow roasted in small batches in St. Augustine, Florida, and approved by TMOS. Even though Charlie originally wanted a Chuck E. Cheese dark roast. We overruled him.
That's good.
Support small business and enjoy Charlie's Choice.
There it is today.
God damn it. Get yours at the TMOS store at MichaelMaraShow.com. Don't be like that one listener that called Josh and couldn't find it. Josh had somebody say, where is it? I can't find the coffee. Josh, would you like to give a little clarity on that that question?
Yeah, go to the store. You scroll right past the bonus show subscriptions that you can now get in the store as well.
Right.
And then it has featured products.
Featured
and it's got Charlie's
products.
Choice, very okay. big. You will see this icon.
There it is.
Coffee Charlie's beans choice. With the coffee
Charlie's
cup.
Charlie's Choice.
Can't
so
miss
you
it.
Go to Amazon.
Shut up. start your day right with Charlie's Choice because it's good to the
Charlie's
last.
Charlie's Choice.
It's good to the last sip.
It's good to the last sip.
Thank you.
Yummy.
Thank you, Charlie.
Yummy.
Thank you, Charlie.
It's good to the last
okay.
sip.
Charlie's Choice, play your thing, please.
Oh, we got to do the thing. God. I forgot. Okay.
God
yeah.
almighty.
I didn't know how long we were going to
come on.
It.
Come on.
Mike,
run that board.
Run your board.
Relax. It's coming up.
Hey,
see?
I like that. Some beautiful God. Video.
It's not like we don't do the Jerry same shite every day. On
love makes it happen, Mike.
Love. Hello.
T-M-O-S.
Mike, if I say the name to you, Gustavo Amadovar, does that mean anything? I'll say it again. Gustavo Amadovar.
Gustavo Amadovar drives a 712 horsepower Dodge Durango.
He is a young reporter that they put out in the field on some TV station. They didn't say, but here's why I love this tape so bad. Someone dislikes this guy enough that they went out on their own and made a smash cut edit of every time he signs off with his name because they don't like the way he signs off with his name.
Okay.
And I know we're going to
Can
bail.
I interrupt for a second?
Please?
Is this the type of thing where he over enunciates the Spanish dialect?
Not per se. It's, you know, what happens is some people
we used to talk about that years ago, right?
Yeah.
Where you would say, for Eyewitness News, my name is Guadalajara.
Or also the cooking lady, the Italian cooking lady on the Today Show would be perfect American English, unaccented until she got to cheese, and would be like, and then you're going to get some mortadella.
Mortadella.
So, Mike. Check this guy out.
Okay.
Think of the effort that went into this.
We are live in Orange County. Gustavo Almodovar. Gustavo Almodovar. Gustavo Almodovar.
Oh,
Gustavo Almodovar.
No.
Gustavo Almodovar. Gustavo Almodovar. Gustavo Almodovar. Gustavo Almodovar. Gustavo Almodovar. Gustavo Almodovar. Gustavo Almodovar.
In just a moment.
I love the internet. This is good use of the internet, ladies and gentlemen.
Not only is he saying the name the same way every time, you got to watch again. Watch he does the neck thing
yes.
identical every
Dovar,
time.
Gustavo Almodovar. 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 Gustavo Almodovar.
Somebody really
hates. Oh, and someone just brought up something in the chat room. Watch his eyebrow.
Gustavo Almodovar. Gustavo Almodovar. Gustavo Almodovar. Gustavo Almodovar. Gustavo Almodovar. Gustavo.
Oh, God.
That is the best.
I have a very sincere prediction that after a short career in television news, he'll be selling real estate.
That is fantastic. Boy, oh, boy. Let's be careful out there. You never know who's looking at you. Come on now.
All right. Here's why we are broken as a society. Have you seen the video, the social video that's trending right now of the girl in the expensive strawberry?
No, I have not.
All right. This is a thing. She's in California, and she bought herself a Japanese strawberry. A strawberry.
Okay, this is a $19 strawberry from Erewhon.
It's a $19 berry. One berry for $19.
So we're going to eat it. It's from Kyoto in Japan, And apparently it's like the best tasting strawberry in the entire world. So here we go.
It comes in a plastic dome.
Can you pause it for a second?
I can.
At least it's a good mouth that strawberry is coming.
You are really disgusting.
I'm sorry. She's a honey.
Would you
She's
hate it if I stopped it now so you didn't get to see her eat the berry?
I look for you. I would kill you. I would kill you if you stopped the video.
So if I were to take it off the screen.
No.
And let you think about it a little bit.
No.
Okay, you want to see her eat the berry?
Here we go.
Gustavo Almodovar. Gustavo Almodovar. Gustavo Almodovar.
Stop it. Okay, let's watch her eat the berry. Okay.
I thought it was going to fall onto the floor while she was opening that package.
No, massive berry that is.
Listen.
That's a big berry.
I want you to listen to her take the bite because it pays off with something I have to say later.
Let me put my headphones in a little bit.
Yeah, good.
There we go.
Keep your hands to yourself.
He's sitting on a little tray. Wait. You
got to
just eat it like this, right?
Sure, like a pacifier. She eats gross.
That is the best strawberry. That's crazy.
Did you hear the crunch when she bit into the berry?
I didn't like the whole...
Mike, I'm so sorry the relationship won't last.
I'm sorry. That's it. I'm leaving her. I'm leaving her now. I can't stand that. That's not good. That was not a good path. But I wouldn't mind watching it at least one more time.
There's a crunch when she bites into the berry, which indicates it's been refrigerated and it's not in its natural state. It should be soft to the
taste. This is a $19 strawberry from Erewhon. So we're going to eat it. It's from Kyoto in Japan. And apparently it's like the best tasting strawberry in the entire world. So
yummy!
Here we go. I don't even know how you open this.
That is some kind of packaging.
It's literally sitting on like...
Is it, or is she just not good at packaging?
No, that looks like it's pretty elaborate. That's like a sealed berry. You got to get you have to keep the air away from the berry. You know, it would be better. I'd like to see a deeper dive on the berries themselves. Perhaps they could get a TV reporter that would be able to get out there and.
But who could we get on such short notice?
Gustavo Almodovar.
This berry is too expensive. Gustavo Almodovar.
Awesome. I love that. I've used awesome too much today. What's wrong with
awesome?
Awesome
is a good word. Mike,
I'm tired.
You know the sort of square thing that you use for carpentry? It's actually a isosceles triangle, right? It's no, a right triangle that, a square. So you can make sure your joints are 90 degrees.
Josh, do you know what he's
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, you're going to see it here. It's a carpenter's square, but not like a T-square. It's a carpenter's square.
Oh, a 90.
Exactly. Yeah. And so there's a guy who calls himself the king of the square, and he throws them like a knife instead of doing carpentry. And watch what he can do. I have to wonder what led up to this to get it done, but he's good at it.
He is a level 100 carpenter, as he has mastered the art of mimicking the sound of Thor's hammer with every throw of a speed square. Initially, he started with single throws, but after months of training, he began to understand.
So he not only can make it land in the tree, he can bounce it off and catch it again.
He seems to be very skilled, and that would leave a mark if it hit you in the head.
It would.
And the physics more deeply. So he started experimenting with multiple throws in a row, making them fly and return like a boomerang. Whoa. But his true precision comes when he turns his target from a tree into a trash can, which is clearly harder than it looks and really gets your brain ticking when it lands.
So I can understand throwing it into a tree being tough.
Who was the reporter that
AI
that was doing that? That
AI.
I think that was a local reporter.
Was it?
Gustavo Almodovar.
Look at Josh. Look at Josh with his head in his hand.
I'm trying to understand what the guy's saying.
Gustavo Almodovar. That's
saying
his name.
Is that his name?
Gustavo
That's his name.
Almodovar. Yeah.
Yes, come on.
All right. I thought he was saying Gustavo Almodovar.
No, it's Almodovar.
Yeah.
Gustavo Almodovar.
What are you, deaf?
Almodovar. Gustavo Almodovar. Gustavo Almodovar. Gustavo Almodovar.
I want to know who put that together. God bless you.
That's familiar. What else do you have, Rob?
Mike. But the guy who said he was the king of the speed square is challenged by another guy. And I think this is valid because Obviously, getting it to stick into a tree is tricky.
Yeah.
But throwing it into a trash can is no big deal.
I don't think so.
Guy sort of challenges
it. I was on TikTok a couple days ago, and I found an account where a guy was calling himself the Speed Square King.
So he does the throw and catch.
And I was like, I don't know, that sounds a little pretty.
Now, you got to stay with this. He has a beer can in his hand along with the speed square that he's going to throw. Okay.
All right. He hit the beer can as he
pierced the beer can with it.
It's like,
I don't know. Who knows? Maybe the guy is cool as hell.
Atta boy. Look at how swaggery he is.
He is swaggery. Yeah.
There you go. Swagger, swagger. Yeah.
We say a lot of things about the old WJFK, but I will say this. We had a great vending machine. It would deal out candy on one, and then we had one that was a Mountain Dew one. It was great. And if it ever ate your money, you just needed to tape a note to it. And you come in, and your desk would have 75 cents in it, which was great. Mm-hmm. But how bad do you want a snack?
Mouse and machine. Yo.
Dude. Oh, there it is.
Can I get a Cheetos? Maybe a Doritos or Lace?
Mouse Wake just up. Hanging out.
I'd put money in to see that thing spin with the mouse right there.
Oh, absolutely.
I need that empty number.
Is he going to do it?
No, he doesn't do it. He just spots the mouse. Sorry, but it's still not good to have a mouse.
You know, you need to put in that machine a Komodo dragon. I'm sorry. I'm an idiot.
Actually, for a small fee, Mike, I would sit in the machine.
There you go.
And there'd be a piece of tape that said Robin Machine.
What's the rest of that mouse?
Mike, let's close with this. I just want to remind you, you're talking about how there's a sort of a blemish on television right now. There's nothing to watch. I just want to remind you what's coming up on March 6th.
I'm going to pay my scientists, all the people in my lab, my developers, the lab rats. It's a wash. Well, why you do it then, baby Billy? Because I'm selfless, and I want to heal as many people as the dear Lord will let me.
Mike. That is one of the greatest Southern dialects I have ever heard.
And
from Walton Goggins
it's
again.
It's not just that. It's the battling with the teeth.
Oh, absolutely.
It's so good.
Yeah. I'll be all in on the Righteous Gemstones.
Everybody. I do love it.
I just adjusted my glasses when I didn't have them on my face. Tired much, Mike? We got to run. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode. Also, we got a TMOS Extra coming up this week, and
yes.
I think you'll be fascinated. It's my take and Rob's take and just a general take on the state of the world.
Mike,
little current events for those of you that constantly ask me, is it sports or politics? What, Rob, were you going to say? Excuse me?
Yeah, your hat is crooked.
There you go. I'll fix my lighting tomorrow, too. I promise.
Lighting has never been better.
Yeah, super. Yeah, I agree with that.
Right.
And it's got lots of horsepower.
Could you close those blinds?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's still 100%. Raining down there.
I know. It's just terrible. Hi, neighbor with the weed blower. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode for Josh Soroka and Rob Spiewak. Michael Mara, thanks so long, everybody.
Bye-bye, folks.
Want more? Make sure you check out the Michael Mara Bonus Show. Get it at MichaelMaraShow.com.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
I'm Ray Barboni from Miami.
A what now?
That is a lie.